I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. A Rhodes Scholarship is one of the most prestigious awards in academia, given to just 32 college students in the United States every year so they can study at the University of Oxford in England. This year's recipients, chosen from more than 800 applicants, reflect the diversity that characterizes the United States. That's according to the Rhodes Trust. Almost half of the Rhodes class are either immigrants or first-generation college students and includes 21 women, which is a record. Well, one of those scholars, Ania Moore, is our guest. She's a Philadelphia native. She attended City Public Schools, and she's finishing up her senior year at the University of Pennsylvania, where she's majoring in sociology and urban studies. She is the first in her family to attend college. Ania Moore, a great pleasure. Congratulations. Nice to have you with us on
Thank
Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And to our listeners, you can call us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. So it's been about a week since you learned you are a Rhodes Scholar.
Yes.
Have you come back down to earth?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. In the yes ways, I still have schoolwork left to do. I'm writing two theses, both of which have drafts due tomorrow. And I didn't work on them when I was preparing for my interviews. And in some ways, no, it's something that you dream about for a very, very long time that is like very statistically unlikely. So to the fact that it happened and that I prevailed is something that I'm still sort of kind of processing and dealing with.
Well, and I would also think just out of 832 people out of 800 applicants, just sort of figuring out what it was about you think that attracted the Rhodes Scholar people.
So,
what do you think it was?
I think what initially attracted me, so the way that it works is your university recommends you, and there's about 800 of those, and then they limit it down to a little over 200. It's about 13 to 14 in the 16 regions. And I think what got me to become a finalist was definitely my story. I had a really strong personal statement that both weaved in my parents' lives, my difficulty into the work that I was doing. And then I think what really shined through in that final round, there were 14 finalists in Pennsylvania, and then two of us got selected. Was I've been telling my friends, I think I was a bit of the personality pick. I was definitely very sassy, have some slightly radical views on public schooling and on education in general and other social issues, and wasn't afraid to show that or my emotions and let the judges get to know me.
Well, don't ever lose that. That will take you far, I promise you. So what was it like? I mean, what is the process where you learn you are a Rhodes Scholar? How does that work? And you mentioned the fact there were 14.
Yes.
In Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Right?
So it's actually, and I was dreading this for months, it's such a unique experience. So what happens is that about 2 to 3 weeks before the final round interviews, you get an email saying, hey, you're a finalist. Show up on the Friday before Thanksgiving every year across all of America, all 16 regions. You show up, you have a cocktail party with the judges and all the other finalists. It's a really wacky thing. And then the next day you go and interview, and then they deliberate while you're all sitting in a room like down the hall. They bring all 14 of you in after they're done deliberating, and they say, we're going to announce the names of the two scholars that we're picking in alphabetical order.
Kind of like Miss America, right?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
So were you shocked?
Oh, more than shocked. I was telling a friend yesterday, I think back to that initial moment, and I still can't believe it. To the other finalists in the district, they were incredibly bright, incredibly compassionate, just wonderful people, and I never saw myself being picked among them.
Really?
I remember after the cocktail party that night, I went home to my hotel and I cried. I was like, I'm never going to do this. I'm not qualified. Like, there's so many wonderful people here.
Do you feel qualified now, though?
Yeah.
I mean, not in an ego way, but just,
yeah,
you did this.
I did this. I do feel qualified. I deal with imposter syndrome, which is a huge thing that first-gen low-income students face all the time. But, you know, I'm sort of kind of just trying to live in the moment and celebrate my successes right now. Just because I won doesn't take anything away from those 12 people who weren't selected. They're still as wonderful. They're still as intelligent. And they're still as important.
Tell us, you mentioned the imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. and I should add that I think many of us, myself included, often feel that mm-hmm. imposter syndrome, that somehow we're going to be found out to be not the person that mm-hmm. people think we are. But as you said, first gen, low income, to use your words, that there's a certain kind of imposter syndrome associated with that? Help us understand.
Yeah, so first-gen low-income students, and many people, not just first-gen low-income students, often believe that they were just lucky, that they got to the places that they got, whether it be college, a scholarship, a certain job, because they were not lucky, not due to the actual skills that they had worked hard to build up over their lives. And a lot of that, I won a Truman Scholarship as well back in March, and I remember the Rhodes process has been easier. I've been dealing with less imposter syndrome, but I was still talking to one of my friends in July about how I felt like I didn't win deserve Truman, and I won it like back in March, April. Wow. And just feeling like, you know, I wasn't enough, and that they just liked me because my parents died and they felt bad for me, not because I was necessarily the most intelligent or did the best work or anything like that.
Since you mentioned it, and mm-hmm. this is when I read about you, Anaya, this, I mean, made me heartbreakingly sad mm-hmm. to know that you lost both of your parents. Your father when you were a senior in high school.
Yes.
Your mom when you were a freshman at the University of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
What helped you through that? And I'm really sorry to
Thank
know
you.
That you lost both your parents, especially so close together.
Thank you. I often say what got me through those toughest of warnings was three things. One, my students at the Henry C. Lee Elementary School, which my entire Rhodes application focused on, during my toughest of mornings, I was like, well, these kids are absolute stars. They get me up. They get me smiling. So I got up every morning, you know, largely due to them. Two was definitely due to my family. They tried their hardest often to pick me up as much as they could because they know I needed to survive this. That there was my cousin Renee said on the day that my mom died, she was driving me somewhere. I don't remember where, but she said, I pray that I know this is going to be your lowest moment and it only goes up from here and you just have to get through this. And they worked hard to help me to understand that. And then three is definitely I'm a religious person. My parents were religious. My Nana was religious. So a lot of my faith and a lot of my telling myself that this isn't the end for me, that there's something greater out there for me and that I want to get through this. And yeah, it was right. It was tough, but it's been wonderful.
There was an article about you in the Inquirer where you talked about your parents and mm-hmm. their belief in you, but also their support mm-hmm. of education. You went to Philly Public Schools. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, they would be so proud.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely, I like to tell people, I've been probably dealing with imposter syndrome my whole life. I just didn't have a word for it looking back on it, not feeling like I was ever good enough. But my parents were the people who saw greatness in me from the right. beginning. They said, you're going to go somewhere. We don't know where you're going to go because we've never been there. We don't even know what it looks like because we've never even been able to touch that area. But you're going to go somewhere and you just have to believe in yourself. And I spent so long running away from what they believed and then eventually just so happened to run into it, you know, through things like winning a Rhodes and a Truman and started believing and seeing what they saw.
Why do you think they were so confident in your skills?
If I'm being entirely honest, I work with families and parents at Lee, and I think a lot of parents have faith in their children. Parents love their children. I think life is complicated and that love and what they want for their children due to societal barriers isn't always able to shine through. I don't entirely know how they knew, but I imagine when I have kids someday, I'll know.
Right. You'll see that spark, that thing. Here's a tweet from Ian. Henry C. Lee, a school parent here. We love Ania Moore and are so happy for her and proud of
Thank
her
Thank you
as
so
well.
Much, Ian.
And the Lee School's in West Philadelphia.
Yes.
How did you get hooked up with them?
So,
and you do a lot there, based on what I read.
Yes. So I like to say that I sort of kind of stumbled into Lee freshman year right after my mom died. Just so happened, did music and drama and choir in high school and didn't necessarily want to join an a cappella group when I got to Penn, but wanted to provide students with music training that I had never been provided when I was younger. So started through the music program at the Netter Center for Community Partnerships, which is a civic engagement and community service center at Penn, who have been some of my greatest supporters, and started directing the choir and then wrote this 75 long page paper.
You did?
Yes, I did, on family and community engagement at Lee the summer after my freshman year in as a part of this internship, and then started doing family and community engagement work after I wrote that paper, and I've been doing choir and family work ever since at Lee.
you described it as a safe place for you.
Yes.
Or a home yes. for you as well.
Yeah. Lee has been my home away from home. And times when I felt like I didn't necessarily have a home after my parents died and I was trying to, you know, build those connections back up and really learn to love and, you know, to trust and to just be happy again, Lee was what provided a lot of that for me. And it's just such an incredibly special place. There's I spent a very long time when I was little, because I was naive, running away from where I grew up because I felt like I didn't belong. And then after everything was taken away from me that I did belong to, I ran right back to it. And Lee reminded me so much of my neighborhood and my public elementary school.
And you grew up in Southwest Philly.
Yes.
Where did you go to elementary school?
I went to a little school named Penrose in deep Southwest Philadelphia, very close to the airport.
And I know exactly where you're talking about. And where did you go after that? Where did you go after elementary school?
And then after that, in eighth grade, I applied to Masterman, which is one of the magnet schools in the city, and I was there from 8th to 12th grade. Really funny story. I don't know. I'm not an incredibly brave person, per se, particularly when I was little, and I got the guts to tell my mom. My mom didn't want me to go because it was an hour away by public transport, and I said, Mom, either you sign this paper or I'll forge your signature. Either way, the application's going out. And I was like, looking back on it, I'm like, that's illegal. But, you know, She signed it.
Okay, yes. Just to make sure that everything is all legal here. A tweet from Nick saying, what, in your opinion, can we do to make Philly schools better? I mean, based on your own experience at Lee, but also your own experience in the Philly schools, do you have thoughts, ideas about that?
Definitely. So I think one of the things, this might be very specific to my area, but I'm doing a lot of research on family and community engagement and gentrifying schools in particular. And I think one of the things that the Philadelphia School District can definitely be better about is sort of kind of monitoring their catchment and working with, you know, developers and how in gentrifying areas, working with developers and different people who are buying properties in those areas to make sure low-income families aren't being kicked out. There are a couple key schools that I'm thinking of in particular where those catchments need to be monitored closely, and the school district needs to partner with the city of Philadelphia and the developers to make sure that affordable housing is still available in that area. Second thing is that, you know, I am, one of my huge focuses is on family well-being and family and community engagement at schools, and looking at how we are providing parents with services that they need. I think one of the most beautiful things about Philadelphia education is this growing wave of community schools, and figuring out, instead of waiting, you know, for all the schools to be official community schools, encouraging our, you know, the staff members at our school, even if you don't have the official label, how can you start to build that up with the resources that you currently have?
What do you want to study when you're to Oxford in England?
So I actually haven't applied to Oxford yet. Most of the scholars don't apply till January, and I'm thinking through that right now. I'm interested in master's in public policy and then also master's in comparative social policy. Those are really the two degrees in which I will be able to combine my love for education policy and also my love for family welfare policy, and sort of kind of see how we can do better community economic development and family well-being practices through education and locally.
I read, too, that you're interested in a law degree, being a lawyer?
Yes, I am.
That's your sort of ultimate goal, I guess?
Yes, definitely. So I want to go to Oxford for 2 to 3 years. I want to come back, either work somewhere in Philly or locally for a couple years. And then the goal is to ultimately go back to law school, get my JD, and then come back to the city to practice public interest law for low-income families here.
And you're really a real Philly booster.
Yes, I am.
You love this city.
Yes, I love the city. I think I'll never know what the judges were thinking, but I think they got on me a little bit about that in my Rhodes interview. They were like, oh, she's so Philly. I'm not saying I don't know if they were actually thinking that, but it seems like at moments they were. And I was like, yes, I'm a Philly girl. That's how I introduced myself at the cocktail party. You all have to sit around in a circle and then you introduce yourself. Right. And everyone's like, my name is. And I was like, I'm a lifelong Philadelphian. My name's Ania. And it was just
good,
you know,
for you. You mentioned the fact that you're first generation, you're low income student,
yes,
at University of Pennsylvania. What was the biggest challenge for you? I'm taking you back, I guess, to those early couple of days, or even maybe early couple of weeks or months at Penn, as a first gen student.
I think the amount of judgment that I received as a first-gen low-income student. On my third day at Penn, I was told by a professor when I mentioned where I grew up that I was lucky that I had not been shot. And the amount of judgment and sort of kind of stereotyping of my neighborhood, of my people, of where I come from. I like to say a lot of the things that happen at Penn are like, you know, sort of kind of hidden racism, hidden white supremacy, hidden elitist notions, or the elitism isn't hidden as much, but, you know, hidden classes, you know, property traits and properties. And I just think the amount of fighting and pushing back that I've had to do as a low-income Black woman who is the first in her family to go to college to help people to understand has been, you know, not the best. I will say this, though, is that Penn has a huge first-generation low-income student movement that is growing, and the university is trying to change the culture. We have our largest class of first-gen low-income students with the newest freshman class, and they're making a lot of progress in the area. So Penn's definitely an up-and-coming place, but, you know, before the up-and-coming comes the not up-and-coming.
Comes you.
Yes.
Well, Ania Moore, such a pleasure. Congratulations. We're also proud of you.
Thank you.
And again, she is a Rhodes Scholar, won a scholarship just about a week or so ago, just one of 32 college students in the U.S. going to the University of Oxford in England. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.